What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 67, Yoga with J-Lo, for January 29th, 2014. I'm your host, Jeremy Jackson. With me today is...
George.
Marlon.
Edith.
Morena.
Jocelyn.
Alex.
Aisha.
Lorena.
Okay, so real quick, we just had snowmageddon yesterday here in Pasadena. We had a whole, like, three pieces of ice. And then on Friday, we were also closed. So everything's a little bit, I don't know, I think the kids are probably a little bit antsy because they've been stuck inside all day yesterday. They didn't get to see me yesterday, so they're a little sad.
Yeah, of course.
Let me see, you know.
No, I'm just kidding.
And so the thing, we didn't get to go over everything. We didn't get to practice everything, check it, make sure everything is working like we normally would. So if things aren't working just right, we're going to blame it on the incredible amount of snow and ice we've had here. But more realistically, I do feel sad for the people in Alabama and Atlanta. There was kids that were actually stuck in schools. Did y'all see that?
Yeah.
There was kids that like had to sleep at school because the roads were closed and the traffic was so bad. And so,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, I would have been going through it if I was them kids.
I would have
been
crying.
Once it started snowing, I would have walked out. I'm going home before this gets any worse.
Yeah, probably not.
How bad was the snow? Like how high?
I think the problem was not the snow. It was the ice. So the roads were iced over, so the traffic couldn't get there or out. There was so many accidents that it just blocked up everything, and then they couldn't move anything because there was ice everywhere. Okay, so Jesse Lopez, he's an athletic trainer at Dobie High School here in Pasadena ISD. How long have you been an athletic trainer, Jesse?
This is going on my fourth year there at Dobie. Hello.
Fourth year at Dobie and overall.
Altogether, it's going on 10 years, I believe.
Going on 10 years?
Yeah.
All right. So that's me, too. This is my 10th year. My seventh year here, so. And just Jesse's been on once or twice before, a couple of different things here on the podcast. And so we were talking at some point either last year or earlier this year about some of the things that he's done to help prevent injuries. And just recently we had an in-service where we were talking about some of the other exercises and some of the cool things that he's been able to do and include over there at Dobie to help prevent injuries, which is the biggest part of our job. If we can prevent injuries, then we don't have to treat them. So we're going to talk to Jesse about that, see what he's done and how that's come out for him. Real quick, if you want to join the conversation, I believe Cat Webb and Springwoods High School are joining us. There's todaysmeet.com/sportsmedicinebroadcast. Obviously, our website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, has links to all of those. So sportsmedicinebroadcast.com has a link to all of those. So if you want to join in, ask questions, it should be able to ask questions on the Google Hangout. Edith should be watching for those questions there and either responding on there or asking those questions on air. Marlon should be able to see them too. George is watching today's meet. So hopefully if you have a question, we should be able to get it answered. But I did change up a few things. So if everything's not working right, we'll blame it again on the snow. All right, without much further ado,
Mr. Lopez, tell us about Mega Lunch.
As far as Mega Lunch goes, it's seeming like I was just actually talking to someone about this recently. We're seeming to be kind of the poster child or the guinea pig within the district, at least. The way Mega Lunch works is pretty much what I got from it is it's more geared towards having a work-like environment, almost like if you were at a job or something. And you get your lunch time or your lunch break, I guess you can say, on the job. Pretty much, I don't want to say you can be carefree, but you know you can go off and get whatever you want for lunch or go hang out wherever you do during the work hour that you get. So now we're kind of referencing that towards the students as well. They get, I want to say, it's pretty close to an hour period, and you can have any lunch you want that's there on campus. You have to remain on campus, but you can hang out anywhere you like there on campus. So you can't go off until the hill, which is way in the back part of the campus. But, I mean, anywhere within the buildings, within the Dobie, you know, school itself, you can hang out. So I have kids come and, you know, get a lot of snacks from me there in the training room. They'll come get some treatments during that lunch hour sometimes. It's just kind of whatever the students feel that they want to do with their lunchtime.
So we need to do that.
Yeah, well, that's where we got the idea for our Eagle Time, right. Except for it wouldn't work specifically for us. So, you know, Eagle Time, you can go to the cafeteria and hang out, or you can go and make up work.
But they're talking about lunch.
I think it's better, like, Mega Lunch, because first of all, Lunch ain't even long enough. And the
lunch is like 30 minutes.
Lines be all the way.
You got to remember, too, and that's the issue that the kids brought up at first, too. But this is the whole school is within that hour time. So mm-hmm. you say it's not enough time, but yet you have all, well, Dolby has close to 4,000 students all trying to get lunch all at the same time also. So that's also the issue you got to consider as well.
Right. So currently lunch is an hour and a half to feed our 2,500 kids. Mm-hmm. So then that would be 1 hour to feed 2,500 kids. So it's not just, oh, hey, yeah, now lunch. I get an hour for lunch. Well, you, but also it's the time where they join clubs or go to tutorials, which is our Eagle time. Mm-hmm. And then also they can come in for treatments. How has that been received? People coming in often?
It works great. And it works good for me because, of course, it gives me another slot to have some sort of treatment sessions. So you have some kids that, you know, some varsity players that have seventh period athletics versus fourth period. They'll come in during their not only will they come during their morning treatments, they'll come during their mega lunch, and then they'll come during their seventh period athletics as well. So it gives me an extra opportunity to work with that individual and get them hopefully back on the field or court quicker. So I enjoy it. It's one of those things, too, that, you know, it does become a nuisance at times just because I sell items out of my training room in order to make some money for the program. So that can sometimes be real clustered in there every so often. But as far as therapy goes, it works. It happens, and it's just a matter of adjusting ourselves or our rehab to, you know, who all is in the training room and whatnot. So it's good. I enjoy it.
All right. So that's kind of, again, we have something similar but not quite the same. And we don't really have anybody coming in for treatment. Mm-hmm. We have kids going in for class. We have some of our – we have a sports medicine club, so mm-hmm. – today, George and Laura and Moreno came down here, and it depends on, you know, if you're passing all your classes, you can come down here, hang out, and we could play the Xbox, or you can work on your work down here, that kind of thing. So it's kind of a pretty cool concept, and so far it seems to be working out for us. So.
Right. Yeah, and it gives our athletes an opportunity as well to work on their tutoring versus taking up the coach's time at, you know, cutting into practice time, cutting into the teacher's time, you know, before or after school as well, so they can knock out everything during mega lunch instead.
All right, so last year, were y'all having to start practice at like 3:30? Because we get out of school at 2:30, so we all having to start at like 3:30 because of tutorials.
Yep.
And that's pretty much...
And it's so far this year, it's been pretty much defeated. You still have kids that are on on the brink of failure, and so those will still... But those are far in between. So there's not a mass quantity of our athletes, at least during football season, that are all at tutorials. So it's kind of just a few of them here and there that are indefinite need of the mega lunch tutorial and the after school tutorial, if necessary. But it kind of overall, it helps everybody, the teachers, the coaches, everything. As far as the athletes go too, I recommend to them, hey, bring your stuff in. I have a fridge in my training room, throw it in there or keep it in your locker. There's a microwave there in my training room as well. There's one in the coach's offices also. So they can, you know, that way too, we can regulate what's good for them and what's not from the nutrition standpoint. That's one of the things that I've been pushing a lot this year, especially is our athletes eating properly in order to be getting the gains that they want in the off season. So it's better than the small amount of foods that they're giving them during the lunch hour or the lunch room, at least. I've had kids come in with a pretty big size Tupperware full of chicken breast and rice. You know, and that I'd much rather something like that than your little chicken fried steak or chicken tender, whatever meal that they give y'all in the lunchroom. So it's not bad. It's a way too that I can kind of see what the kids are eating versus wondering or asking them what it is that they're eating. So.
I think it's something that we're kind of working towards is, you know, if nothing else, then pushing chocolate milk or the Gatorade mm-hmm. recovery thing. Cause then if they could take that within 30 minutes of working out, they're better recovered for the next day, more fueled for the for whatever.
Well, I'm even selling those just to give them. I mean, that's almost not so much a meal replacement, but it's just a snack of some sort. I'd rather them eat that than a bag of Funyuns or something.
Right.
You know, so I'd much rather them do that. And it's, I mean, the kids are slowly but surely kind of catching on, and I don't know if it's that they're feeling the difference in themselves, or it's just that they're starting to buy into it. So far, so good.
All right, and then so I know we've talked a couple of times, and some of the snacks that you sell there are like mm-hmm. trail mix. Again, right. That's got nuts and healthy snacks. You're not selling Funyuns.
Right.
And, you know, you got some peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, that kind of thing. So things that are good for the athletes that are going to be, you know, either quick fuel or usable fuel mm-hmm. and that are relatively healthy. So
definitely.
Very cool. Hopefully I can get some more of that nutrition stuff going on here and helping out our athletes and things like
that. Yeah, and at first you get a—I don't want to say you get a lot of resistance, but you kind of be like, "Man, I'm busting my tail trying to do this, trying to do that." You're going above and beyond, and you're not. The kids aren't really being real responsive. They're not coming in and buying the stuff and this and that. Slowly but surely, it'll start catching on, and they'll start. You know, our peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, whatever I make is what I sell. I mean, I can't make enough of that. The trail mixes, I mean, I just sold probably 60 or 70 baggies in one day the other day. So, I mean, the kids are wanting the stuff. It's just a matter of them, you know, when one kid takes one out of my training room, he tells another kid or a kid asks, hey, where'd you get that from? By the time I know it, I got three other kids trying to get the same stuff. But it works. I mean, it's good stuff. And, again, it's good. They're good snacks. And I'd rather the kids have portable stuff that they can take with them in and out of classes than just they got to sit down and eat it and whatnot. So.
Sweet. So since we're talking about injury prevention, I think that goes right along there. Good health.
Oh, yeah.
Been reading, you know, stuff on Twitter where the diet is about 80% of your health. So, you know, if you don't eat right, then you don't sleep well and you don't feel well and you don't perform well. So,
yeah, you got to fuel that body.
All right. So we're going to move a little bit more towards your the stuff that you've implemented.
Okay. Can you tell us about your injury prevention program?
I let baseball was actually my little guinea pig. They actually let me take charge and kind of tweak out things that they needed, things that they didn't need, stuff like that. They were just, the order was not where it needed to be. The amount of weight that they were pushing was far too much for what they were trying to do, at least at first. Some examples where they were doing like some side twists, you know, ab type maneuvers with like a 25, 35 pound plate. What they thought that they were doing was core exercises, and in actuality, you have to establish some sort of core first before you actually want to start bringing in maneuvers, especially with weighted maneuvers. So we went ahead and dropped that weight down, pretty much educate them a little bit on how the core is stabilized, what it does for you, that type stuff. Sure, some of the stuff we were saying was probably in and out of the ears of some of our athletes, but in actuality, I'm big on informing the kids on what they're doing and why. So that way they're not just like, oh, coach sucks. Or he wants me to do this just because he just wants to be mean to me. It's more if there's a reason behind it, you'll see it and you'll start to notice the differences once you actually start to do it correctly. So what I started doing was building that core, yoga being a part of it, but just establishing core maneuvers like they needed to and making it baseball specific. So in baseball, every player bats. So every player needs to have that rotational force, that rotation within their trunk or their torso. So again, we wanted to kind of manipulate that or kind of replicate that with weight room exercises. So you have your medicine balls, you have your planks, stuff along those lines that are actually going to activate that core in the long run. And it kind of snowballed into that. I don't want to say I did a lot of work, but in some sense, I just tweaked out everything that they were already doing, and kind of found alternatives that were more baseball specific versus just a weight room maneuver that is done just because that's how it's always been. So I took away, you know, your typical squat, your typical bench, because when does a baseball player ever really do that maneuver? They really don't. So instead of squats, you know, I took that out and we implemented more of like your lunges, your one-legged type stuff. So like a one-legged step up with some weight, stuff along those lines. That way it's still, you're hitting those same muscle groups, but you're doing it more in more of a functional way versus just up, down. And again, we wanted to make it baseball specific, which, I mean, in baseball, you always do everything pretty much off of one leg to some extent. So it was a task, but I mean, it got done, and now it's almost the point where it's second nature to them.
All right. So that's just with baseball. And, last Wednesday, we didn't have a podcast cause we were on a field trip. We went to Minute Maid Park and talked with Rex Jones there. And then we walked over and talked to Theron Inns at the Houston Dynamo. But I stayed for a second and talked with I believe his name is Cliff or Clint, and the weight training person, I don't know what he's called, the person that's in charge of the weight room at the Astros. And he was saying the same thing, is they don't do heavy weights on squats. They don't do heavy weights on bench because there's no real reason for it in baseball. They Correct. Do just what you said, a lot of lunges. Because
right.
they're in baseball, you're lunging all that time, mm-hmm. all the time. You're doing a body weight squat where you're, you know, if Alex here is at second base, he's pretty much standing in a partial squat,
right.
just waiting for the play. And so that kind of thing, I think it's really good to implement. And he was saying everything they do with the legs is, you know, foot on the ground. So it's closed chain rather than open chain.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, those are the people at the professional level. They're usually going to be at the forefront, at the front edge of what we're doing.
Right.
And so that's really cool that you said, you know, we're doing lunges and not squats because they don't squat.
Right.
And then they get tight in the hip flexors and,
right.
and they cause more problems.
And then even to kind of add on to that, now, right now I'm kind of battling a beast in itself because I'm trying to implement the same stuff with the football team. But again, football is you got the numbers and you have these, you know, not to down the coaches, but these coaches that have they're more of your old school mentality. They are not up with the times, even though they've gone to these conferences, they've gone to these coaching schools and stuff like that. They're not being very receptive to some of these things and they're not buying into it yet, at least. It's going to take something like some sort of TV show of some sort, some Hard Knocks type, you know, filming that to really see what they're doing in the NFL or in the collegiate worlds in order for them to start maybe buying into it, which is stuff that I tell my coaches all the time that, you know, I've been on all three levels when it comes to football and they still haven't bought in. My baseball coach, fortunately, he just had to hear that I was a part of UT baseball, and he was all ears. I mean, he wanted anything that I can offer his team. He wanted to buy into it. So I was lucky at that, and so far his program, at least, has been decently successful. Not just because of me, of course. I'm definitely not saying that, but he definitely wanted to give me some credit for it. So he's, again, we're on the second phase of our whole strength conditioning deal with baseball. And he loves it. You know, again, we're tweaking it out this year versus last year. We're just actually adding on to what we had last year and trying to build those players that are going to be with us for three plus years. So it works good. Football, again, it's tough. Like you just mentioned, those hip flexors are getting tight because why? Oh, get low as you can on those squats. Oh, push as much weight as you can on those squats. But again, where do they do a squat in football? You're in a stance. You don't ever come straight up when you're in a stance when it comes to football. You always want to push out. And that's not being replicated. So again, I want to try to push like bounding of some sort, one-legged, you know, lunge type hops, stuff like that. That is going to be more functional, more of a use to them on the football field. But again, the coaches are being my biggest adversaries right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, one of the other things that I don't know if it would be possible to implement. I guess it would really take a dedicated strength coach. The guy with the Astros said that. If he was in a high school, what he would do is have a freshman program, a sophomore program, because most of these kids don't know how to lift weights. We just tell them, all right, get over there and do squats. Well, at the freshman level, they're not, you know, they're going to do 3 sets of 10 or they're going to do 3 sets of 15 with no weight. And then the sophomores maybe do 3 sets of 12 with just the bar. And then the juniors, you know, they have in, you know, 3 sets of 10 with a little bit weight on the bar, that kind of thing. And so at each level, you're teaching and making sure they're doing it correctly and allowing for the skeletal maturity. And, you know, that thing would be awesome because there's a lot of kids that get hurt.
Right.
You know, they come over here with my back hurt. Well,
right.
You're squatting. Well, you know, I didn't warm up and I just put, you know, 300 pounds on the thing and, oh, now I'm hurting. Well,
yeah. And our coaches do a good job at the freshman level, at least, because, yes, they realize that the freshmen are coming in not knowing anything when it comes to weightlifting, even though their weight rooms are better than ours at the high school, unfortunately. But, you know, it's one of those things that the coaches are taking the time to properly educate them in the weight room. But, again, if they're so moldable or malleable to where we can actually start something to where it's just we can start something that's just something along the lines of teaching them the basics of doing some ladder drills or, again, more functional type movements versus those core foundational type exercises like your squats or your benches. So, I don't know. It's something that's a work in progress, of course.
Yeah, I definitely am interested. I know we've talked a couple of times, and it's just one of those things. It's how much work am I willing to put in to... or to be involved. And you know, like you said, trust in the coaches. Mm-hmm. The baseball coach trusts you. The football coach doesn't at this point, just for that.
Right. And well, so, see, and right now, like you mentioned that, right now I'm at the point with football that I'm kind of just, I'm going to let it kind of give up on it just because it's not, it's already this far along and I've been pushing all since the offseason started, which was in November-ish, and I haven't gotten much reception for it. So I'm kind of like, well, why keep on getting myself frustrated, adding more to my plate when the coaches aren't being receptive at all? So this year I'm kind of considering it a washout unless by some miracle, you know, some coaches really want some input. Then maybe I'll start to put my 2 cents in again. But right now, I think I'm just going to stick to our job.
Yeah.
Yeah, which isn't a bad thing.
You said you worked with soccer, too?
Oh, yeah, yeah. This year, we got a new soccer coach. He knew that soccer program was going to be more of a younger team. He felt that he needed to build our guys a little bit more. So I kind of had a one-on-one with the two soccer coaches, and they kind of told me what they wanted out of their team. Performance-wise, and I said, well, okay, if this is what you want, let's do these, this, and this. Again, more functional stuff, more quick, fast-twitch type maneuvers, adding some weight here and there, throwing in the bungees. I got quite a bit of a repertoire of bungees, bungee cords, so you have that progressive resistance. Again, your one-legged lunges, your one-legged step-ups, your squats. I mean, I still have squats in there, but it's more of a, they drop down, and instead of just coming, up, down, when they get down to the bottom, it's more of an explosion. So we're keeping the weight light and we're exploding up versus just, coming up and having it be a rep. So it's more of that explosion, that fast twitch muscle, involvement. And it's just kind of going from there. I haven't been able to see them very much lately. I think I've only caught one of their games so far. But again, we're a small group. Our guys aren't very big in size. Soccer, in actuality, you don't have to be massive or have to have a large structure in order to be a good soccer player. So I'm not worried about seeing the physical changes. I'm trying to see the performance. So. Once the soccer season is in full swing, which is here in the near future, I'm sure I'll start noticing, what we should have worked on, what we can work on, stuff like that when it comes to at least next year.
Tell us how you use the battle ropes.
The battle ropes have been something that the kids hate, but all the coaches love, of course. The battle ropes, for those of y'all that haven't seen it, it's just those. It's just a thick rope that has some weight to it. So the ropes that I've ordered for all my teams have been the 40-pound ropes. So a lot of people think, 40 pounds, that's really not that bad. But once you get it going, you're in a squat position, and you're going with a motion. There's several different motions you can do, but it is definitely giving you some sort of cardio endurance along with that strength aspect as well, since you have that weight that's applied. So usually they go with those ropes for a good 30 seconds to a minute at a time. And you'll be surprised how tired you get just within that time frame, okay? So usually it's not just one that you're doing either. It's going to be one here, one there. So usually it's going to be about a set of three ropes that you're going to have different maneuvers with each one. But it's definitely – I like to see it because I like to break some of the students, not break them like physically. But, just it's a mental aspect, I feel, that it, with any sport that has to be built up. So you got to know that, okay, I've battled these ropes. These ropes they're tough, but I'm gonna make it through it. So, when you're in the middle of a play, you're in the middle of a game, and things are starting to get rough and tough, and again, mentally, are you gonna be prepared to end up finishing out the game and doing what you need to do? So they have a lot of fun with it. The kids hate it, but then they come to me after the workout too, and they're like, "Man, those ropes sucked, but I'm gonna feel that tomorrow." So that's what I want to hear. That's what I like to hear. A lot of them is just a matter of keeping them low. The reason I keep them low in a squat position is, again, when you're in that position, you have to maintain that core. So we kind of make that core activate. We make them actually kind of just stay in a position that, again, if it's a football player, they're in that position regularly. It's just a matter of having them do something functional along with it.
All right, so give us a description. Like, what are some cues that you would give if you're watching one of your students that they're doing it correctly or doing it incorrectly with the battling ropes?
If they're doing the ropes, I'm making sure, I'm letting them know, let's stay knees parallel with the hips. So they're in, a squat position or almost seated position. I usually want them to be at least shoulder width apart, if not more, because I know it is tough to stay close-toed if you're doing those things. So some kids have actually tried it and it doesn't work for them. So the wider base that you can get, the easier it is for you to maintain that position and still be able to do that maneuver. Another thing is, it depending on which maneuver it is, if they're just going like up and down, back and forth, then I want them to kind of get it to their face at least, or try to keep it about face level, and so they're dropping it down all the way to their hips, all the way coming opposite arms, kind of doing coming up to their face. Another thing is just keeping the rhythm, you know, because you'll also see the ropes are long enough to where you'll see they'll create a wave if you're doing them right. And if that wave's kind of just being real flat or it's not even happening, then, yeah, they're not doing something right. So it's just one of those things that you just got to watch them and have them maintain, you know, posture, have that back straight as can be, just like you would with the squat. Again, contracting that core, you know, sometimes I'll kind of walk by them and I'll kind of tap them in their gut, trying to make sure that it's nice and hard, nice and activated. Once they leave that whole station, you know, they're going to feel it in the glutes. They're going to feel it in that core. They're going to feel it in the arms, of course. They're not going to want to do anything else. But again, I'm mentally preparing them as well for a fierce competition on the field or the court, whatever it is that they're doing.
So somebody like Aisha, she wants to run track. Do you think that the battling ropes, it seems like it's centered on using your arms. Do you think that that's going to benefit her?
Yes.
And prepare her?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because, again, it looks like it's an arm exercise or a shoulder exercise. And, yes, it does target those areas. But, again, you have to maintain that core. Again, being in a squat position, your glutes are firing. Your hamstrings are firing. You're going to feel stuff in your quads for maintaining that contraction for that long. So, all in all, that wouldn't be something if she was a track star. I'm not going to have her do that every day, you know, every other day kind of thing. It's going to be, you know, just something, if anything, a warm-up type deal or something just to, again, mentally abuse her a little bit, if anything. So,
do we have those?
I think they do have ropes in the weight room. I've seen them before. I haven't seen them recently.
Are they big?
Yeah, I mean, the ropes probably.
This sounds cool.
They range in size from 3 inches in diameter. So, and again, what's even crazier is that just altering your grip on those ropes sometimes will make a difference as well. So that's one of the things I did as well, altering the grip with my baseball players. So if you change the grip, and again, you're working grip strength with dealing with baseball, even football, you know, that grip strength is important as well, because you got to, you know, football wise, you got to be able to rip inside and kind of throw a player to the side if necessary, if you're in the line. Baseball wise, you got to be able to grip that ball. You got to be able to, you know, close that mitt, you know, when you're catching a ball. Stuff like that. So, I mean, it's all stuff that's relative to whatever sport it is that you're doing. So it will benefit track in some sense, but I would say more from the mental aspect, more from the core. If anything, if you want to target a muscle group, it would be more of a core exercise.
I want to do it. So we need to go in there and find them. So I don't know. Same those. On a warmer day, though.
Yeah, it's a little cold to walk over there. Actually, the walking bridge was iced over this morning, like completely iced over, and so were the stairs over there. So. Really? It could be fun for me to evaluate concussions and broken bones if you want to walk over there now.
No.
No? Okay. You sure?
I'm positive.
All right, because, you know, me and Jesse, we could go, we could take the show on the road. I could do the hangout from the laptop. And
that'd be fun, but no.
They look fun, but once you get going, they're not as fun as you think they'd be. You'll get tired real quick, and again, that's one of those things that I tell a lot of people to just start off slow.
I just like the feeling of of like a good workout afterwards. When I feel sore, mm-hmm. I know I did something right.
Right. Oh, definitely.
That's why. That's the only reason why I like working out. Because when I'm sore, I'm like, okay, I did something right. Even though I hate being sore.
Why did you choose the exercises you did?
Well, again, when it comes to the exercises, it's what sport we're working with. What is it that I see that can be worked on? What are we wanting to stress? What are the coaches wanting from me? Those are going to alter which exercises I want to implement. So if my baseball coach wants more shoulder stability, then I'm going to start working more, your push-up, changing position on push-up, doing some possible weighted ball throws of some sort. It's just a matter of working those certain groups. So a big thing I've had issue with is having stability within the shoulders across the board, even soccer players, because of course they fall and they land on their shoulders. What I've been noticing, and I think it's more of an age group thing versus a sport thing, is that the backs aren't developed properly or enough to where, you know, if you have a throwing motion, those back muscles aren't supporting that force that you do when you're coming down with that ball or whatever it is that you're throwing. So if those back muscles can be worked a little bit more, we can have more stabilization within that shoulder area as well, because it's all kind of it's all tied in together. But I mean, exercise, it again, the coaches are the biggest, I guess, determinant on what exercises I'm going to do.
I guess so. Sports specific. I know you told me you had a whole list of exercises, and then like if someone said they wanted to work on the stability for their soccer players, because mm-hmm. you know, with soccer there's so much of it that's on one foot,
right?
You know, if they're running and somebody bumps into them, they need to be able to stabilize themselves on that one foot, because they're right. not going to be planting their feet and having a firm base and letting somebody run into them, whereas yeah. football they might.
Right, definitely. I mean, across the board, kids at the high school level, they're going to have weaknesses. They're still developing, they're still growing into their bodies, you know, puberty's still hitting them regardless of if they're male or female. So I try to specify certain things, but also I'm trying to do an overall body workout in the long run. Trying to get everything equalized. I mean, Jeremy will know that, you know, if you have imbalances within muscle tissues, within structures, then yeah, something's bound to give. So, I mean, it's kind of in our nature to let's get everything balanced so that we can create an athlete that is balanced, that is symmetrical, that has the same strengths versus more weaknesses. And that, again, it's just, I mean, if I can evaluate on an individual basis, that would be awesome. But yeah, that's, I mean, at Dobie we have a good 300-400 plus kids all in athletics, so
well, there's a lot.
Yeah. I'm not going to spend the time evaluating each one and what they need to work on.
That's something I'm actually working on. I think I kind of mentioned it briefly, but at the San Antonio conference, I listened to somebody talk about the FMS, the functional movement systems, and the SFMA, and something I'm working towards is seeing if I can write a grant to have everybody, all the athletic trainers within our district, certified in that, so that we can actually look at the athletes, do an assessment, and say, hey, let's add these corrective exercises into your warm-up. So, you know, it takes a little bit of work on the front end, but then on the back end, they're doing these exercises, and then they're not spending all this extra time missing practice mm-hmm. in the training room and right. or a doctor's office or whatever, because we'd spent a little bit of time up front. But again, right. you know, it's a little bit harder at a school where it's that big, but right. you know, if we're all trained, then maybe we just set up a yeah. rotation where, all right, everybody come over.
Well, when would the kids do that, though? Would they do it on their own, or would it be something that they'd implement with the coaches?
Well, the corrective exercises, it would be something that they do on their own. Well, like when they're warming up for practice. So if right. all your defensive linemen have, you know, tight hip flexors, well, mm-hmm. then we do, you know, you give them the corrective exercises for those, and then in their warm-ups, they do that.
Okay.
And so, you know, obviously, again, it comes with buy-in from the coaches saying,
right.
well, maybe yes, we're going to give 5 minutes for them to do warm-ups or corrective exercises and that right. kind of thing. But I'm still in the process of researching, and so we still got a little bit of time for that. But, you know, yeah. something that I think is really interesting is the functional movement and the assessment and figuring out how you can prevent an injury. And again, that's kind of what we're talking about here is injury prevention, exercises and monitoring and stuff like that. So,
okay.
Is there a certain number of sets or reps you have your athletes do?
Not necessarily. Depending on what phase it is that we're in amongst the off season, that'll probably determine it. So if they are more towards the what I call more of your tapering phase, which would be more when they're about to go into season. So let's say like recently it would have been my soccer players. They just started their season, so they're everything's kind of on the tail end. The sets are going to be a little less. The weight's going to be a little less. The movement is going to be what we're looking at, because again, the movement is what we want. But if it's, let's say, the beginning, like football season in the November-ish time, right after, you know, while playoffs were going on and we were out of it, you know, that's when we're packing on the weight. So if you're at your, you know, quote unquote, your bulking type stage or whatever, you know, you're doing the heavy weight, the low reps. So, you know, we'll have, you know, 80% of the rep max, their maxes, and you're doing your 6 to 8 reps per exercise. Set wise, you know, I mean, 3 is always a pretty good number. You know, again, it depends on the coaches though too, the time frame. So I leave that more up to the coaches as far as the percentages go, what they want to do, and then me, they usually kind of come to me more on what it is that they should be doing. So, you know, if they are wanting them to bulk up, fine, okay, let's do this, this, and this with that amount of weight, that's fine, that'll work. So they kind of just check up with me, is this cool, is this a good time to be doing this? And usually, you know, the coaches have an idea at least of what they should be doing. It's just a matter of implementing it.
What data or evidence do you have that it has helped?
Well, when it came to me taking over football last year, you know, we had a real good system kind of in place last year. And, I mean, we had gains across the board. They started off with everything they tested, which I don't agree with just because, you know, you're testing them and they don't properly – some of them don't properly know how to do some of the stuff yet.
Right.
Which is, you know, that's always a debate. But across the board, I saw anywhere from gains. I actually saw gains of at least 20 to 30 pounds in every lift from almost every athlete on the football team, which was very surprising. I didn't even expect that myself. But I think, again, that goes with possibly having more coaching happening. So they're actually getting more involved with the kids, making sure that they're doing exercises correctly, that type of deal. And then the kids actually buying into the whole program itself. So that was one. When it comes to baseball, my first year, some of the guys that weren't even close to cranking it out of the park. I had one of our guys that he averaged one home run a season. His senior year, he ended up cranking out, I think, 8. So that was pretty awesome. He loved that stat, of course, that he can add to his resume. I had some kids that had no business hitting the wall or cranking it out of the park. They were doing that. They were hitting it out there. They started becoming long ball hitters versus just, you know, in ground, you know, infield type plays. It's hard to kind of notice the gains in football just because there's so many out there. It's tough to say just because the competition levels are always kind of up and down. You saw the numbers, but our season kind of was in the dumps this year. Which was, to me, I kind of took it a little personally. I felt that they should have done a lot more. But there's a lot of factors, too. There's always the coaching can always be a factor. The players can always be a factor. So what happened during the off season, once summer came along, kind of went out the window. They didn't maintain, which we kept on preaching the last couple of weeks of school last year, maintain everything that they built, which a lot of them, it showed that they didn't. A lot of kids, we saw the confidence levels increase in a lot of the kids, which was cool. And it was just them being sure of themselves. But again, from the football standpoint, I didn't see much, which is kind of disappointing. So I was hoping to get another shot at it this year, and it looks like they're going another direction. So we'll just have to see.
So no hard facts or evidence? You're not statistics?
Not, unfortunately, no. Not at least from the work that we've done.
Right.
Of course, I'm sure there's statistics out there that show that, you know, functional training versus just straight powerlifting is, you know, going to benefit an athlete, you know, overall. I'm sure there's some kind of study out there, but nothing that I've actually found myself or looked up myself yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was talking more specifically, like, you know, in-house, like the stuff that you found personally with you, with the stuff that you've implemented.
Yeah,
and just the benefit of that.
Yeah, it's tough to say. Again, we did have kids that a little more defined. I did see some kids with a little more definition and some more, I guess you can say, stronger movements. Again, the biggest factor was baseball when they were, you know, cranking balls here and there, which they weren't before. I'm thinking this year or this upcoming offseason with baseball, I want to start doing some more hand-eye coordination type stuff towards the later part of the conditioning process. Football-wise, though, it's kind of tough to say. I mean, it's a large group. Numbers are always an issue. Time's always an issue with those guys. The biggest thing is having these coaches implement things that they have to do versus giving them options, unfortunately.
Going forward, what would you like to see implemented?
As far as conditioning goes, I'd like to see, when it comes to football at least, more of the stretching, more of the yoga type, I guess you can say, maneuvers. Our coaches aren't big on it right now. Baseball has been the only team that has actually bought into it, and they've kind of gone away from it this year, unfortunately. it's one of those things that they got to do on their own now instead of the coach actually implementing it and requiring it. They would spend an entire period doing just straight yoga stuff, and this year they haven't done that at all. So, I mean, it's one of those things that it has its place. Again, while I was at the University of Texas, they did that. I mean, you had everybody within a gym all doing yoga. The guys hated it, of course, but they felt good afterwards. The players, I mean, when I was there, I mean, we sent a good, I think the class that graduated within the time I was there, there was a good 20-something NFL recruits that ended up going into the NFL while I was at Texas. So, I mean, I'm sure that it had its place. It's tough to say what it was and what it did for them exactly, but, of course, it had its place and it did what it needed to do. I wish that I can say that and the coaches would buy into it like that, but unfortunately they're not. So some yoga, some stretching, more stretching, loosening up those muscles that they've been building, you know, throughout the off seasons. That would be awesome. Again, the coaches are being the biggest adversaries when it comes to stuff like that.
So talking about yoga, do you have specific exercises? I know there's different names for things, but maybe just giving a description of some of the ones that you would, if you're just to pick three or four or five, mm-hmm. that you would say are going to benefit almost all athletes, what do you think those might be?
The big ones, of course, are going to be the, what is it, cat maybe?
I don't know, is that where you're on all fours and you like raise your back?
Yeah, where you kind of...
Like a mad cat?
Right, kind of mad cat type deal. And then you also have your Sphinx, which is kind of the opposite of that, where you're arching that back and you're kind of pushing up with your hands. And again, I like those two just because your back's involved so much. And a lot of, you know, the core exercises involves your back. And if your back can be how it needs to be, that's one less thing that you have to really mess with. Backs are difficult, and I'm sure you know. I mean, they're a pain that you have. They range in treatment times from, you have some kids that can be good within a week's time. You have some that will be a month or two dealing with back issues. So I'm real big on trying to maintain some sort of core stability along with those back functional movements, or keeping that back to where it's not so tight. And now that I'm kind of speaking on that, the whole fact on back issues usually stems from hamstring tightness, which a lot of athletes don't realize. But the fact that those hamstrings get so tight and they pull on that pelvis, you'll sometimes get some, you know, elongation of those paraspinals that run down along that spinal cord. So a lot of kids will come into the training room, oh, my back hurts, my low back hurts. The first issue I always ask them is like, how do your hamstrings feel? Usually they're gonna say, oh, it feels fine. Once you start assessing them, they actually start to realize that those hamstrings are actually tighter than they thought they were. Start loosening that up, and by the time you know it, that low back spasm or pain that they were having is now kind of resolved almost. So it's just one of those things that we know as professionals that it needs to be done. It's just a matter of having the kids or the athletes do the same.
Yeah, for a long time I've kind of said the same thing is, usually low back pain is from either tight hamstrings or weak abs. Mm-hmm. And so by you doing yoga, you're utilizing the core exercises to strengthen your abs, and then right. stretching exercise to stretch out your hamstrings, make you more flexible. Yeah. So
I mean, you'll get a workout, believe it or not, doing yoga, which is even crazier to some people. You'll be sore from yoga. You sweat while you do yoga sometimes. I mean, we're not talking hot yoga here. This is just yoga in general. And you'll actually get, I mean, and you got to realize that as you're doing some of these yoga maneuvers, you're having to contract and, you know, contract and release some spasms. You're holding positions for long periods of time, stuff that you don't do on a normal basis. So, you know, it has its place, and I can see why it works. I've done it myself a few times, and I don't like it very much at all, but I can see why it's a good thing to do. So flexibility is key when it comes to a lot of athletic maneuvers or athletes in general.
Talk about the vibrations plate y'all just got.
During my work at the University of Texas, the NFL with the Tennessee Titans, I got to see something that we called it was called the power plate, and both of those places had that. And basically what it was a plate that vibrated at a real forceful rate. I didn't really start understanding it though till recent, just because I started researching it a little bit more, and then that's why I decided to go ahead and purchase one myself for the training room. What it is when first of all, it was kind of I don't want to say implemented or it got started more as a deal that NASA developed. What they were starting to notice were these NASA researchers and whatnot were starting to realize that these astronauts were coming back from space with a lot of low bone density. And for those of y'all that don't know, in space, you know, since you don't have gravity and whatnot, your bones aren't taking any sort of force. So you start to get your bones start to weaken up. Your muscles also don't have to work as hard either because you're not having forces placed amongst your body. So they developed this power plate, which creates these vibrations. And again, it's at a real forceful rate. And in order to maintain yourself on this plate, you have to contract and co-contract a lot of musculature in order to maintain that position on that plate. So they finally realized this. NASA developed it and whatnot. Then it started being placed amongst the athletic realm, and they said if it does that for astronauts, it can probably do the same thing for athletes and just people in general. So again, as you're on this plate, as you're doing whatever it is, you're standing on it, putting a push-up position on it, whatever, you're having to contract and co-contract a lot of the muscles within whatever body part that you're using in order to maintain the position on that plate. So again, it's musculature that you normally don't use during your normal maneuvers that you would do on that plate. So for instance, if you're just doing your standard push-ups, you know, you have a lot of activation of your pec, you have a lot of activation of some of those shoulder muscles, your biceps, your triceps, all that stuff. But if you do a push-up on the plate, not only are you doing activating all of those muscles as well, but you're also getting those small, minute muscles that could be used more for stabilization, stuff along those lines. To maintain that your I guess stance on that plate with that vibration. So it's a cool concept. I like it. It's pretty interesting. The kids they like it. It feels funny to them. They all laugh when they first get on it. But again, it's almost like when we're doing some balance or some proprioception type stuff in the training room, and you're throwing a ball at an individual. You know, you're kind of getting their senses. Their senses are being thrown off. And that's kind of what it's doing here, but it's in a more concentrated area. Mm. So it's really cool. The athletes that I've used it on, they really like it. I also use it as, I call it a shake-up. So they get on it, the plate vibrates pretty forcefully, and it actually will loosen up some of that lactic acid and stuff that's built up within the body. So it helps with soreness. My track athletes love it. So right now I'm having to tell them that no, they can't get on it unless I tell them to get on it. So a lot of them are coming in just to get on it to loosen up that soreness. And that's not what it's specifically for, but let's say I have an athlete that pulled a hamstring and they have a little tightness going on, then I might throw her on there, him or her on there. Kind of hitting more on the nutrition aspect. You know, I've been lucky to where the administration hasn't given me much flack for it. You know, everything that I do sell to them is on a nutritional basis. So it's kind of tough for them to even gripe about it. And again, my personal, you know, opinion is that these lunchtime dinners or lunches that they're serving these kids, it's not suitable for an athlete whatsoever, regardless of the sport that they're playing, especially your endurance athletes. I mean, it's not even close to the caloric intake that they need to be getting. So I feel it's an injustice that, you know, these kids are having to eat these, you know, 500, 800 calorie or caloric meals, where their sport in itself requires that they use, you know, 6,500 with just one exercise bout. So it's very unfortunate. And I recommend to a lot of the kids to bring their leftovers from home, have mom, dad, you know, pack them something, you know, even if they just pull out a ham and cheese sandwich type deal, it's still something more than what it is that they're being served there in the lunchroom.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And, you know, here we have a pretty strong culture, cultural influence, and, you know, being a strong Hispanic culture in the area, they have a lot of rice and beans and tortillas, right. And it's kind of, well, you know, that'll work. It's better than nothing, but, right. I mean, we gotta work on getting something else in there, too.
Right, definitely.
And then a lot of them are on free introduced lunch, so that, you know, they eat their breakfast here, or they don't eat breakfast, mm-hmm.
And I think it's another thing is just the mentality of these kids at this age. They feel, you know, invincible to where they can just do whatever. And I mean, I had an individual the other day just come to me pretty much falling out at practice. And my first question, of course, was, what did you eat today? Of course, the response was they hadn't eaten anything. So it's kind of one of those things. I unfortunately, I mean, it's one of those things. it looks bad on my part, but I can't do anything about that. I can't do anything for that individual. I mean, I can give them a little snack to take, but it's still, it shouldn't have even happened in the first place. So it's just them being conscious of it. Education, I think, is huge. That's something that I've thought several times about. How can we educate these parents more? You know, is it something as simple as a flyer of some sort? Are most of the parents going to get it? Are they just going to throw it in the trash? I mean, it's something we can do, you know, at least that way they can, we can say that we're doing a good job. And we can only do so much, and they're only going to receive as much as they want, unfortunately. So it sucks, but that's kind of the way it goes.
Yeah.
But preventative wise, I mean, I'm trying to, my big thing is trying to cover myself on every aspect. Okay. So we're, you know, the sports, the conditioning type deal is one aspect to prevent them from being in my training room. Nutrition, that's something that we can always do better on regardless of if we're an athlete or not. Again, that's what I'm trying to push now. So, I mean, athlete-wise, you know, anything that we can do in order to prevent our athletes from coming into our training room, we're doing a good job. It's not that we don't want to work, because, I mean, we all have worked. Everyone in the district, as far as athletic trainers go, we have our resumes and our backgrounds that where we've put in the hours, you know, for our job. So doing the job is not what we're trying to get away from. We're just trying to prevent as much as possible. And when it comes to the description of an athletic trainer, having taken preventative measures from the athletic standpoint is a part of our job.
Right. So yeah. So I mean, that's why I say injury prevention, right, care, and rehabilitation. I mean, definitely. The first part is prevention.
Right. Definitely. So I think as much as we can do to prevent things from coming into our training room, the better off we are as far as the profession goes. So, and now I've been hearing as of late, you know, we're starting to get a little more notoriety. You have professional organizations, you got corporate organizations now that are starting to buy into athletic training and starting to realize how resourceful athletic trainers actually are. How much we can actually benefit a company, a team, an area of any sort. So I like the way it's going. Hopefully we get a little more notoriety as we go on through the profession.
I agree. I'm really interested in functional movement and prevention and that kind of thing. And so that's why, you know, I talked with Brett. I'm going to plan on talking to Brett and Cat Webb again. I'm talking with you. Mm-hmm. Those are just right now, that's the thing that really kind of piques my interest, something I'd like to learn more about, I'd like to be able to do, and that kind of thing. So
yeah,
really appreciate you coming over and talking.
Anytime.
So I'm going to go ahead and close that out. There's people that support us. Recently, I believe I've talked about the Pasadena Health Clinic. They wrote a grant, or not a wrote, they, I asked somebody for help because I wanted to do a training for all of our, CPR training for all of our freshmen. And so the Pasadena Health Clinic donated $5,000 so that we could buy the CPR in schools and mannequins to train all of our freshmen, and then we could do that around the entire district and create a CPR trained army, basically, because if everybody in the school knows how to perform CPR, then that covers pretty much the entire area, because if every one of the high school students knows how to at least perform CPR, then anybody in there in contact with is not covered or safe, but, you know, they're taken care of. Mm-hmm. And so Pasadena Health Clinic is really doing a good thing in donating that and also helping organize that. So I want to say thanks to them. Pasadena ISD Education Foundation grants, we just, again, received other ones so that we can, the Pasadena ISD helped with creating a CPR army. They're going to get us AED trainers and that kind of thing. And there's just constant stuff there. I've talked about them a whole bunch, but there's a reason. It's because I really think that they do an awesome job of supporting educators. So, and then I'm working on some more grants to turn into the Education Foundation, so we'll see from there. My beautiful wife, Sarah, she was with me this morning as I was trying some of the new Hangout on Air stuff, trying some of the questions app. And so, Sarah, if you're listening, I love you, babe. Thanks for supporting me and helping with everything. And if you can always check out our website, sportsandmedicinebroadcast.com, for the latest episodes, for ways to contact us, that kind of thing. Almost every Wednesday, you can listen live. And then obviously you can subscribe through most of your podcast sources. If there's one that you really want to listen to us on, but it's not on there, let me know and I'll do my best to get it on there. My Twitter is PHS Sports Med. Google Plus is PHS Athletic Training. Facebook.com/PHS Athletic Training. So for Jeremy, the Sports Medicine crew, and Jesse Lopez from Adobe High School, that's a wrap.